What is up? Welcome to the After Hours Entrepreneur. Today's episode is just fantastic. I know I always say that, but it just seems like every episode is better than the last. Today we're joined by Brady Lewis. He's the creator of AllMoxie.com. And Brady's story is absolutely phenomenal. He grew up in a family business, but recognized some problems inside the business that he wanted to solve. So he got busy, he got dirty, he started resolving the problems within his own business. And then other businesses started saying, hey, Brady, we want what you got. And so he was able to scale out this amazing software for cabinetry. It's just a really, really spectacular story. And what I really would like you to pay attention to, there were a few main takeaways for me. One is it's challenging to work with family. What are the challenges of working with family? Is it something that you should look at? Two, disrupting the status quo. Stop doing what's always worked. Now is the time to change. You got to continue to evolve. And then thirdly, find problems to solve. Start looking for problems. Start solving problems. I think as an After Hours Entrepreneur, it's been challenging for me to really pin down what my value proposition is. But as I get serious about what I do great and what are the problems that people in the market have, that's when the light shines through the sky and you get clarity. So listen, without further ado, I want to bring on Brady Lewis. Before I do that, I also want to just let you know that I want to talk with you. I think that the most important thing to me is engagement. I've had several phone calls with listeners. Love talking to you. You can also check me out on Clubhouse at Mark Savant. Guys, girls, if you're not on Clubhouse, you need to check it out now. It is big time. I'm going to be talking about that a lot here on the podcast and on YouTube in the coming weeks, but Clubhouse, check it out. All right, cool. Listen, don't say I didn't tell you. Go check it out. In the meantime, let's listen to Brady's story about how he just exploded his family business by innovating and solving problems. Run the tape. Brady Lewis, welcome to the show.
Thanks. So glad to be here, Mark. Appreciate Brady. That.
Yeah, Brady, it's absolutely my pleasure. So on this show, we're divulging the tips, tools, and tactics to help people take their side hustle full time. And you've got an interesting take on this because you actually started in your parents' custom cabinet business. So let's go back in time and tell me about what it was like when you first started working at the custom cabinet business.
Bottom of the barrel. So the like the child labor version or what?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, we're talking like growing up after elementary school. going to the shop, huh?
Oh yeah, my whole life. I mean, both my parents were entrepreneurs. My mom had a salon, like a beauty salon. So I had to like go clean up sweaty lady tanning beds. So I'd do that. But then also my dad, you know, had a custom cabinet shop, and that's the more relevant piece here that, yeah, I worked at since I was little. I mean, since I can remember, full-time, you know, more like in high school, not full-time, but, you know, actually like having to have, you know, keep hours. So I've been in it a very long time.
Awesome. Now, did you go to college as well or what was
technically,
that?
Technically. So because I grew up in a custom cabinet door shop that I hated and I have wanted nothing to do with the business. My mind was as far from that as I could get. So I would sit there and sand doors and, you know, I thought I was going to be an artist and more specifically a painter. You know, that was my career because I wanted to be creative. So I would sit there and dream of that. So I did go to a semester or two and, studied a little bit of art history and then just realized, you know what, like I'm a businessman and this art thing, like I can be creative doing anything. So I'm out of here. And so no college for me.
Okay.
No relevant college anyway.
Yeah. So you're kind of like just, I think like most 20-year-olds are doing, they're trying to figure out what the heck we're going to do. Right.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. So you decide, hey, this path is not for me. And you decided to go into the family business. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was always very inspired by my dad, even though we butt heads so much. He was such a hard worker and did everything for our family and, you know, even took time to coach our sports teams and everything. But like, you know, I tell this story a lot. He would literally like go into the bathroom and I would hear him throwing up, you know, and ask him what's going on. He's so stressed out all the time, just struggling to keep this business afloat. And so I kind of grew up with this, like, I don't know, like I want to avenge him. You know, I wanted to help him. And so, you know, after I got the art thing out of my head, it was like, okay, I could make a difference here. I was actually in Mexico and I went on a tour of a GM plant. That was kind of like my moment of inspiration. I went on a tour of a GM plant and just was blown away by the amazing automation and the manufacturing that was happening and the technology. And I just thought, I mean, I can apply this to that, you know, not run down, but that low tech cabinet shop that I hate so much. You know, there's creativity, there's technology here, and I can take this and I can go there with it. So that's when I kind of the spark hit, and I thought, okay, I'll go help my dad this way.
Yeah. So let's dive into that a little bit, because I think it's really easy. It's really common for kids to start working for their parents, and dad has a way of doing things the way he's always done it. It's my way, the highway type mentality. And then the kid ends up, this is, I think, one of the biggest challenges of being an entrepreneurial father is you want to get your kids involved, but at the same time, you want them to be true to themselves and go through their own struggles. So you're in there, you're realizing that there's some pieces that are broken and maybe outdated, haven't caught up to technology. Tell me about this trip to this GM plant. What brought you down there, and what did you take away that was so inspiring?
Okay. So what brought me down there is I was a Mormon missionary. So okay. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they go on a 2-year mission sometimes. And I was called to go down there to Mexico, Monterrey, Mexico.
So not even work related. Totally.
No. I was there to like serve people, help people. And one of the guys that I was helping out and became friends with was the security guard there. And I mentioned a little bit of an interest in, you know, manufacturing, and my dad had this thing. And so he's like, hey, I'll take you through it. And that's how it happened. Yeah.
Little bit of serendipity in play there.
Yeah, maybe.
So you're down there on a totally unrelated mission trip, and you end up learning about automation, manufacturing, and then you get back home. And was it like something went off in your head, like we need to execute on this now? Or how did you actually get the idea to digitize and develop AllMoxie.com?
No, my dad wisely put me at the very lowest position in the company. And he said, you're going to start at the bottom, just like everyone else. You're going to get paid what everyone else does. So, I mean, I started at, I think, $13 an hour, and, you know, as a 21-year-old kid. And I was sanding doors, right? The same job that I was doing when I was in grade school, right? So, but he said, listen, son, there's plenty of money to be made out there. There's plenty of opportunities. Go make it. And so he put me at the bottom, but also gave me the hope that, you know, there is plenty out there, and you have full reins to go do it, but you have to do it yourself. And so I did that. You know, I would look around as I was sanding doors, and I was thinking, okay, where can I go next? What can I organize? What can I automate? And I literally at the bottom, I'd go one step up. I'd teach the person to work under me, and then I'd organize the next position. And I learned the whole shop that way. I learned every position, and I optimized as well as I could at the time, every position, and just slowly worked myself up to the office, which is eventually how AllMoxie came about.
So this is very almost entrepreneurial, is what it sounds like. As you're growing and learning the business, you're seeing the things that are broken and fixing them along the way. So how long did it take you to get from the bottom rung up to the top of the company?
A couple of years. Yeah. And until I was, you know, in the office or whatever. Yeah. It took me a couple of years of really hard work, hard labor, just doing what, you know, my employees were doing. And I, you know, it was a huge advantage, because I could say that I truly understood every single position. I truly knew what it took. I knew the strengths and weaknesses of that position. And I'm grateful that my dad had the wisdom to do that, you know, very early on.
So you're talking about optimizing these positions on your way up. Explain that a little bit to me. Is it micromanaging the people that you're training, or is it saying, hey, you know, one of the things, just to give this a little bit of context, one of the things that I'm big on is creating lots of systems. And I've got like a 25-page template with every single step of the whole podcast production, right? The whole podcast production platform, right? So is it about creating the systems or micromanaging? Give me a little bit more context.
Yeah. So just for one example, you know, I'm at a chop saw, and the guy's job is to take a stick of wood and chop it lengthwise. Right. So I arrive, and there's just this old machine, and there's no operating procedures. There's no standards. So what I would do is I would just completely take that thing under my arm and I'd say, okay, what's the optimal machinery? And I'd go find that machinery and we'd buy it and implement it. And then I would say, okay, what's the operating procedure? You know, what does a guy do when this happens? And I'd document everything. I'd write the training processes and, you know, what do you do if the machine goes down? You know, what numbers do you call? Just everything. I'd build systems, right? So The goal was that I could step away and hand this to someone else without them knowing anything, and they could do a better job than I did when I first got there.
Yeah.
And so just little by little, I'd do that, but just build systems on systems on systems, including the technology, you know, part of it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. One of the things I do when I'm training or onboarding a virtual assistant, for example, I'll just record video of everything of myself doing it. So I can just, if I lose one VA, I could bring in the next one. I think that's really smart, right? So you're building out all these systems, you're refining the systems. I assume you're rubbing some people the wrong way, telling the old schoolers how to do things, but that's besides the point. At what point did you start developing this technology, AllMoxie, which is, from what I understand, really helping with the logistics of the entire workshop? When did you start fleshing that out?
Before I answer that, going on rubbing the wrong way, I remember I actually fought the foreman in the hallway, like a physical wrestle, okay, right before he left. So yeah, I mean, people hate change. And this guy was just pissed and we wrestled in the hallway. And I was nervous because he was a state champion wrestler and I somehow got lucky and got under him and it ended okay on my behalf. But so the question was, when did AllMoxie start? Is that right?
That's kind of what I was looking for is how we got there. But that's a great story, because I think anytime you're the boss's kid, you're the young gun, you're like, we're going to change this, everyone hates you. You know, that's a super challenging part of working in a family business, I think.
Yeah, it was hard. And I hated how young I was. And I think that's why I have a beard right now, because, you know, I had a baby face and I was 22 years old and I was the boss's kid. And, you know, it was really hard. You know, I couldn't wait to grow up and say that I was older than I was, you know?
Yeah.
But I was grateful for that, you know, that,
so do you think that
experience early on?
I'm curious, Brady, do you think it was that experience of, you know, kind of going through those challenges, being the boss's kid, young kid, do you think it was that experience that really pushed you to say, hey, how can we evolve this thing? What's the way we can take this entire business, the entire company, to the next level?
I don't think it was that. I think it's just built in me. From a young age, I've just, if there's not a system, like, I build it, you know. It's just, I don't know why, it's just, and also just the challenge, you know. I was fighting everyone on the way there, and I like that. I like art. I'm 16 personalities. I'm the debater, you know, so I love to challenge and just debate everything. So it was a good challenge for me to work in this old school environment and, you know, come away with a tech wood shop, basically.
Yeah. So we've kind of gone through a bit of your background here. Tell me a little bit more about, like, when did this program, this software, this system start to really manifest itself?
So once I went to the office, I started diving into the software, and I realized that we were basically running the whole thing on an Excel sheet and QuickBooks. And the Excel sheet needed a lot of work. I mean, faxes would come in from customers, I mean, written on napkins, handwriting we couldn't read. I mean, just you name it. It was just like a disaster. And then the process was, we'd take that and we'd interpret that and type it back into an Excel sheet. Sometimes the Excel sheet worked, sometimes it didn't. Some of the formulas were off. I mean, it was just, and it, you know, it, this is one of the reasons my dad would throw up, you know, because it was built by a neighbor and he had to haggle with it in addition to everything else. And
that's
so
probably
I started
not what
there.
He wants to be spending his time on. He's probably trying to sell and keep the staff. He doesn't have really the bandwidth to do everything, I would think.
Yeah, and he hated being in the office, but he was forced to. So that was my first priority. So AllMoxie technically started as a big spreadsheet. I mean, I put a lot of time into just writing Excel formulas, and I mean, it was this multi page thing. And then I realized, okay, this is not the right tool. This thing can be bigger. You know, as I kept writing more and more formulas, I'm like, okay, this has to, I need another platform. So we went to, what's it called? Access, Microsoft Access. It's more of a database. And then same, I was like, wait, this isn't connected to anyone, you know? So then it was like, okay, webs, like we need a web app that does this. And so hired my brother's roommate, who was a coder, just didn't know anything about it, and hired him to do this thing. So we basically built the first version of AllMoxie hard coded for our business on the web, and launched it. And it was successful. It was really good. And we went cold turkey. We put all our customers on it, made them stop faxing, and made them, you know, go all in on the web, and it worked. And then once that happened, it was like, oh, this is powerful, you know. And by the way, everything's starting to go this way. And so we're gonna rewrite this. Well, so what happened is I had a customer say, whoa, how do I get something like this for my business? And he offered a sum of money for it, you know. Right, and
before we get into that, I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into what you were just talking about, because this is a pretty revolutionary transformation of dad's business, right? My two main questions are: you've come in, you've learned the business, you've learned the systems, you've developed an online platform for basically taking, receiving, and processing these complex custom orders. Were you getting a lot of pushback from the clients and from dad when you're trying to implement this new system?
So dad all along the way. So we have a great relationship. It's so interesting because he has the wisdom to trust me, because he knew his gut tells him, yes, you got to go this way. But outwardly, you know, he couldn't help but fight it and challenge me the whole way. You know, he grew up on a farm, you know, so it's like, if you're not busting your ass with physical labor, you're not accomplishing anything. That's how he grew up, you know? So for me to be sitting in the office building software, you know, it was kind of hard for him. So we butted heads a lot, and it took a lot of time and a lot of money, but he also had the wisdom to let me do it.
Do you think it's because he understood the potential of it, or because he had faith in you?
I think that's a great question, and I've never been asked that one. I think it was probably the latter. I think he had faith in me. And I think he had faith in me, and I think he didn't have a lot of faith in the software, but like knew that I was behind it, so he let it happen.
Love that. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I just love conversating with Brady. We are just getting into the weeds here. Brady is about to drop some more knowledge bombs about how you can find problems to solve. Listen, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. Fresh episodes Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Thanks for subscribing. Let's get into the final half of this episode with Brady Lewis. You've answered kind of the first half of my question here, but I want to know about the customers. How did you force them into it? How did that go?
And this was one of our biggest fights, me and my dad, as to how we're going to launch this, right?
Yeah.
And I said, listen, if we give them the choice, none of them will do this. They've never this is before people were really using Amazon. Amazon was not a part of anyone's life back then.
What year is this? 2000?
2000. This would have been like 2006, 5-ish. So, I mean, especially cabinet makers that, you know, they're not. Amazon's not a part of their life. I mean, e-commerce, they're still like very reluctant to put in a credit card into a site, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of them weren't even using email at the time. I'm serious. Like, so this is what I'm up against. And so, but I told them, I'm like, if we don't make them, then none of them will do this. But trust me. And I was nervous. Like, I really was shitting my pants. I'm like, on launch day, I'm like, oh, this is going to be, I hope this works because everyone used it, and we had one customer, one of our best, call us and was pissed off and said, I'm done. You lost my business.
Wow.
We had one customer, and that was, it was a big deal. It was a big blow, but he was back a week later and everything was fine. And he loved the site after he used it. So we didn't lose a single customer to it. So it was kind of like, whew, you know, a huge sigh of relief, and they liked it and it worked.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So they liked it. It worked. Everything is running more smoothly now. I love how you stood firm and you stood your ground, because this is the type of thing that happens quite frequently. My main job right now is working in the services industry, doing a lot of insurance. Sometimes clients will say stuff like that. Like, if you don't do X, then I'm gone. You're like, listen, that's not possible. I'm not willing to, you know, sacrifice my ethics or do this.
Yeah.
and it's always, it's all, you know, I think
it's hard to do that.
It is, but if you stand for nothing, you fall for everything, I think. And I think people respect that intuitively. Like, it annoys people when you ask for like all this different information, but they realize that there's a reason for that step in the process. I love that. So you've implemented it. It's working. How did you actually convert it from being used just within your company to being something that other companies could use?
Yeah. So I started to mention that, you know, once we had been using it for a few months, and I remember being on vacation and just watching the orders come in and like this is working. Like, it's we're working from somewhere else, you know, and this was 2006. And I'm like, I mean, I didn't even know what the cloud was back then. I don't even know when that was coined, but like, that's what hit me is like, our office is running in the cloud right now. So that happened. And then, you know, shortly after, I got a phone call actually from a close competitor. And I mean, we were friendly competitors, but he calls me and he's like, hey, you know, can I buy this from you? You know, and offered me a sum of money. And, you know, that's when the business model hit me. Like, you know what? I mean, we're not the only shop that needs this. You know, there's so many people that need this nationwide. I mean, throughout the world. So
the competitor asked to buy the entire software from you exclusively, or what did you say when he
asked? I mean, I didn't even let it get that far. I mean, as soon as he offered me money, the deal was off the table, and I knew what my next project was, you know? So I told him respectfully, no, but, I'm going to, and I told him this later, right? I stewed on it and I was like, okay, we're going to rewrite this in a way that it can be used more usefully by you, set up easily. And, you know, I'll get back to you when it's available.
Okay. So you get to work, you're working with your coder, I'm assuming. And what was the timeline looking like at that point? Because I'm assuming you're not going to make it just for this guy, right? You want to make it so that you can actually give this product or give this software to all the other custom cabinet places across the country, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I pitched the idea to my dad, you know, and this is like 3 months after it launched. And he's just settling into like, okay, success, this was good. And now let's go back to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well now we're going to be in the software business actually. So it was a whole nother, you know, another pitch. And not only are we going to be in the software business, but we actually have to start over, you know? Mm. So it's going to be this big expense just to, because how we built it, everything's just hard coded. So we've got to basically start over. I've got to conceptualize this thing from the beginning of how do we, you know, easily set up all of these shops that all have super different ways of operating and, you know, custom pricing and everything else. So that was quite the pitch, but, you know, I was able to sell the idea, and we actually hired another coder at that time. And this was right before the Great Recession hit. So we had just launched our company and didn't have any customers, and we're just building it probably a year in. And, you know, the shop that was funding all this, the cabinet shop, really started to struggle because of the recession. I mean, things were tanking like crazy. Yeah. I mean, homes were, yeah, I mean, you remember it was terrible, and we were hit very hard. So, I mean, it was a fight, to keep that funding even trickling in. But again, you know, the economy there, my dad did end up going for it, and it worked.
That's really cool, because persevering through that time would, I imagine, be extremely, extremely stressful. So now that you've got a product, right, we're kind of fast forwarding a little bit, you've got a service that actually works, right? It's a website, logistical system, allmoxie.com. You can find out everything that Mr. Brady Lewis is doing. So now that you've got the system that's up and running, is it kind of like, if you build it, they will come? Or was it, okay, now we need to get out and try to start selling the value of this? How did you actually get it out on the market?
Definitely not if you build it, they will come. I mean, I to this day, like it is a struggle. Well, it was probably 10 years of educating the market, of why you would even want to be in the cloud. Right. So again, my industry is a very low tech,
very old,
very
school.
hard-headed. Yeah. So, I mean, I remember the first year we went to a trade show was probably like 2011 or 12. People were just like, we had people coming up to us because we had like all Apple displays to do demos, and people would come up and ask, you know, how much were the computers? So like, are you guys selling iPads and, you know, things like that? Like, no, I mean, it was quite hilarious. So, yeah, my industry. Wow. But anyway, so
how do you educate people? That's tough. You're creating an entirely new category, right?
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we would use, you know, analogies. It's like the Amazon for woodworking, you know, and, you know, just we try all these things and people, I mean, I still have people hanging around, like poking the tires, kicking the tires that were there at that first show. You know, they're finally like, you know, we'll see one sign up. We're like 8 years of sales and he's finally here, you know, like, so it's been a very long, long, hard journey to get to where we are now. We're now everyone is pretty used to all this tech and, right, you know, this new economy, and especially with COVID and looking for new ways to sell online. We've had a really good year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And yeah, I think any way you can streamline things, make them more easy, more simple is money in the bank. And I just love your ability to identify problems and fix them. It's something we need more of. It seems like sometimes as entrepreneurs, we're trying to create problems to solve rather than solving problems that already exist. I think it's a really smart way to go, but I do want to dig in a little bit more. How were you actually educating people? Were you getting on the phone and just calling people? Wasn't dad kind of like, hey, you need to be working inside of our business instead of helping other people make their business better? How did that look?
Yeah, there was some pressure from dad to kind of keep me closer, but, he gave into it and he understood that this was going to be our future. And, as far as how we educated people, I mean, all the above. I mean, I spent hours on the phone every day, emails. I mean, I did so many, I had to learn every like animation software out there to kind of like, you know, like imagine this and imagine this going here and imagine, you know, and then I email those out and, you know, it was, and then just trade shows and then just over and over, you know, talking to people and finally, and realistically just time passing. And people understanding the world around them and realizing that, you know, the cloud is where we're going to run our businesses. So like I spent a lot of time helping people understand that the cloud and how, you know, translates to the woodworking industry.
Yeah. And you've positioned yourself as the expert in that particular field. So once people kind of caught up and said, okay, cloud makes sense, I know how to use a computer, then you were already, I guess, the main player in that particular niche, right? Yeah,
exactly. Okay. Yep.
Good stuff. So one of the other things is there's always someone coming to eat your lunch, right? So you've developed this system, all Moxie. How are you evolving and keeping it up to date? Is that a constant struggle?
Oh, sure. I mean, and it's the product's, you know, ever evolving. You know, we have 6 or 7 devs going all the time on it. And, you know, early on, because I saw, you know, this sort of early entry, we and my brothers, we spent a lot of time developing relationships with the people that we thought would eat our lunch later or would want to eat our lunch later. So we formed those relationships with people that would end up maybe coming in and wanting to be a competitor. So we have pretty strong relationships there, and they're more like partners now than competitors. So we've kind of played Switzerland and, you know, made good relationships with all of them. And so hopefully we can maintain that.
Really, really cool stuff. Brady, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom here. Again, you can find everything that Brady's doing at allmoxie.com. You can link up with him all over the web. Brady Lewis. All right, cool. Listen, Brady, before I let you go, we got to get into the world famous After Hours Entrepreneur Rapid Fire. Are you ready? Are you strapped
in? I'm ready. Let's do it.
Lock and load. So let's start here. What is a must-have business-related item that costs less than $50?
Okay, so those giant post-it notes that you get from Amazon. So like they're, you know, the 24 by 36, pull them off, stick them on the wall, and just marker them out. So I go through a lot of those. They're all over the office here, and We love those. Actually, it's $44. So yeah, we're still under, right?
We're in there. As long as you have Amazon Prime, you're good. You can still get a good deal. If you had 10 seconds with yourself 10 years ago, what are you going to tell Brady?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. It's going to take longer than you think. You know, saddle up for the long run. There's a lot of dark days ahead, but you know, you can do this and keep your head down. And it'll pay off in the end. And I would say that same thing, you know, to every young entrepreneur out there. It's going to be more work than you think, no matter how rosy your glasses are. You know, whatever you think the difficulty level is, times it by 10, unless, you know, you get real lucky, times it by 10 and just expect it. Set that expectation and also set the expectation that you can succeed, because you can.
Love that. Entrepreneurship certainly is like a moving carrot that you're always chasing. And once you think you've got it, someone's coming to eat your carrot. So you got to keep going. What is a must-have subscription in your life right now? What is a subscription you cannot do without?
Spotify. I mean, that's probably such a common answer, but you know, while you're working, Spotify. That's my go-to.
Dig it. If you woke up in the morning and there was only one business task you could do for the day, Brady, what would you do?
Fire myself. That's what I love to do. I love to build systems that make myself dispensable. The more that I can do that, the more I can climb and grow and think creatively on my business and not have to spend my time in the minutiae of the business. So that's a general broad answer, but I mean, that's always my goal every morning.
I love it. I think amongst all the answers you could have, delegation is one of the best. And I think we should end it there, because that's the perfect ending spot. Brady Lewis, thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Thanks so much, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening. I love this episode. I love you for listening. Again, call to action, hit me up. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Clubhouse. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me everywhere. Just look for Mark Savant. You will find me, because I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. I want to engage with you. I want to have some real life conversation. So make sure you hit me up and we will get on a call and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. However I can serve, however I can be of value, that's what I want to be. So without further ado, make it an awesome day. This is Mark Savant signing off. Thanks for listening to the After Hours Entrepreneur. Go get him. Peace.